We know that Sudan has been locked in a war between two generals, people desperately trying to get out of the country. What if they included your parents? We're about to find out. But a reminder, one of the two battling combatants, the Sudanese army, walked out of ceasefire talks yesterday. You'll remember the fighting started when the two generals with two separate military forces, the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, who'd been running the country together after a military coup, began battling each other for control. Caught in the middle, the people. Nearly 1.4 million have been displaced, according to the UN. And among them, the parents and family of our next guest, CNN's chief international investigative correspondent, Nema Bagar. Nema, we're just recently learning about this. Tell us more about your parents and what they just went through.
Well, we evacuated my parents, who originally didn't want to go. I'm sure you can imagine how difficult it is to kind of have to face up to the fact that home is no longer safe. And they are very much among the lucky ones because we were able to. My sister's also a journalist, so she was in Port Sudan and she was there to meet them. So then from Port Sudan, they did the journey overland, which was just awful, through to Cairo. And part of why it was so awful is that Egyptian authorities will not adhere to the international rights to safe passage, to safe haven. So every single Sudanese person who turns up at that border, and it is the safest route out of Sudan at the moment, they are processed. My parents told me that people who were on the bus with them got sent back because they didn't have the right paperwork. So imagine being sent back to a war zone. And my parents, who would not appreciate me calling them elderly, but they are older, they're in their 70s. They were stuck in no man's land between Egypt and Sudan for 36 hours. No water, no food, no facilities.
All right, so this must be stomach turning for you. I want to go back to your family in a moment, but if you don't mind, this, you know, as you said, that they're fleeing from, there was shelling yesterday at a local market, 100 injured, 17 killed. What does it mean that the Sudanese army has stopped participating in ceasefire talks?
Well, I think it kind of brings out into the open what so many people suspected, which is that both sides perceive this fight to be existential, that essentially for both sides, this is kill or be killed. So there is really very little that could be offered to either side short of complete capitulation of the enemy that would be enough or would be appropriate. And everything that we're hearing from inside Sudan, which was verified actually by US and Saudi observers recently in terms of the RSF entrenching, occupying people's homes. They've occupied my parents' home. It speaks to a preparation for a street-by-street war.
And the RSF, we understand, the U.S. has confirmed that the RSF is being supported by the Wagner Group. This is the Russian paramilitary group. It's a network of mercenaries. We've been talking about the Wagner Group's involvement in Ukraine, but they're in Sudan.
Yeah, I mean, we did an investigation in the first week of the conflict where we were able to pin down that it was coming via bases controlled in Libya by Field Marshal Haftar. And these are bases that had been clearly identified by the US previously as Wagner bases, and that supplies were being airdropped, including surface-to-air missiles. And our understanding from our information is that that has continued. And I think it really speaks to the ways that Ukraine may be geographically a world away. But for Russia and the Wagner Group, that war is also being fought in places like Sudan. There is no debate about the fact that Wagner is complicit in what is happening in the streets of Sudan, because they have been such a key ally, training, equipment, weaponry, and these supply chains have not, you know, they almost mutate. It's like a hydra. You chop off one head and another emerges. Without those supply chains, the RSF could not continue to entrench and commit the atrocities and the violence that it is committing.
So the RSF, one side of the conflict, and the Sudanese army, the other. Has this become a proxy war?
It feels like it is a war that is both waged as a proxy war, but is very much in service of the individual ambitions of the parties themselves.
Yeah. And the generals.
Yes, absolutely. And so, I mean, Burhan and Hemeti were allied. They overthrew the civilian administration that had arisen after long-term dictator Omar al-Bashir stepped down, because hundreds of thousands of Sudanese risked their lives, many died, to overthrow him. And they, you know, they stole that from the people of Sudan.
Yeah. And now they've turned on each other. We'd love to have you back to talk about how your family is doing, how their friends are doing, whom maybe they left behind. But this has to be gut-wrenching for you. You know, what would you want Americans in particular to know as you watch your parents? I mean, I think people tend to think, well, this can't happen. Your parents were living in what they thought was a functioning society.
Yeah, things had been difficult, but there was always this hope that the civilian administration would be resuscitated, that the transition to democracy would start again. My parents are journalists, and so for them, the idea of leaving home when there was still work to do was incredibly painful. It took 2 weeks into the fighting before they agreed to leave, only because my younger sister threatened to come get them from Port Sudan, and that seemed to work. But they've lost almost everything, and I think it's important to stress, because I think when people, especially in the US, think of Africa, they think of all the horrors and the awfulness. But this was a functional capital city. The people who are leaving now are like you, like your audience. Nobody leaves their home unless home becomes too poisonous to sustain life. Nobody wanted to leave. My father's friend, his elderly mother, died at the crossing. Can you imagine? You know, I'm a journalist. I'm used to operating in front lines. And me and my brother and my sisters spent so much time trying to think, well, we can't get money. We couldn't get money in for so long. How do we get them out? We report on this. I report on this so much. And then it feels like having a layer of skin shaved off to report on it while knowing how it feels so intimately.
CNN's chief international investigative correspondent, Nemel Bakr, thank you so much for joining us with everything else going on, and we wish you and your family well.
Thank you so much for talking about Sudan. It's so important to just keep people's awareness of this.
All right, take care.